When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is episode 350 of Wheel Bearings. I am Sam Abural Samet from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakeland from Carbuzz.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from SAE International.
Outstanding. Nicole.
Yes.
Last week you teased something that you were driving.
Yes.
Tell us all about it.
It was an interesting experience. Okay, so first I'll tell you what it was and how it went, and then how Chevy went oops at one point. Okay, it was an oops. So I have the Chevy Blazer EV, which some of you may or may not know, they stopped taking orders for a period of time because
several months
because it was having a multitude of issues. And some people were driving it, and I guess it was fine. And other people were having so many problems, they couldn't drive it. The screen was freezing up. The charging wasn't working right. Everything was not happening as it should. So here's my story. So I hop in the car to go to drive to the airport to go to my daughter's graduation. And I'm like, oh, cool. I get to drive the Chevy Blazer EV. That's awesome. Russ, you know, it's really funny. They recalled this car and put a stop sale on this because all sorts of, oh, what's that light?
So you get to demonstrate why they stopped selling.
And a little red picture of a car with an exclamation point pops up as I'm driving. And I said,
oh no.
I'm like, Russ, take a picture of that. He's like, what does that mean? I'm like, I don't know, but I'm actually driving. It's not blinking. So I'm thinking nothing's chaotic. Can you Google that? Comes back with like 18 different possibilities for what could be wrong. None of which require you to pull over, but issues. I'm like, okay. He's like, you knew this was broken and we took it. I'm like, no, it's supposed to work now. I didn't know you. He's like, we missed graduation. I'm like,
you knew.
Graduation.
You knew.
Right? So then we're driving along and he's trying to make the screen work and it won't. And he's like, where's the on button? I'm like, it's what? We're like, I bet nothing happens on the screen. Then I use the, you know, hey, Google, please play whatever. Boom. Now I have a screen. I'm like, okay, that was weird. Then it goes off. It comes back on, then it goes off, then it won't turn. Then we park it and the screen is off, which would be fine if you got out quickly. But if you get into the Blazer EV promptly, it knows you want to exit the Blazer EV and it will turn itself off. If you take 2 seconds, like maybe you're collecting your stuff because you're at the airport and have luggage and stuff and you haven't opened the door, it thinks you want to leave it in accessory mode. And to turn it off, you push a button. Do you know where the button is? On the screen. That I can't see. I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? So I'm like doing the lock the car, unlock the car, open the tailgate, trying to get different things, try doing the, hey, Google, nope, doesn't like it this time. Eventually, miraculously, all of a sudden, I was like, poof, screen works again. Plug it in, charge it, come home, get back up here. And I'm like, hey, so Chevy, at first I called the fleet company. I'm like, something is not right. There's a problem. And at first they explained to me how it works. I'm like, I understand how all those things work. It's not doing any of the things that you're saying. It is not working. And they reach out to Chevy. Chevy immediately says, pull the car. We want to send it to the dealer, see what's going on. And they call me and they're like, hey, Nicole, we're really sorry. We don't know what's going on. We're having him pull the car. We're going to send it to the dealership. Do you want another car? And I said, well, no, I mean, I know how it drives. I got that much out of it. But there's just something really wrong. They call me back not 2 hours later. Hey, you know that software update that we installed on all the vehicles so that we could lift the stop sale? We missed yours.
Whoops.
I said, are you serious? She's like, everything from the battery issues to the screen issues, all of it was related to that update. And they still said, do you want another one? And I said, no. I said, because I will believe you. I will take you at your word that all these weird wonky issues were because of that, because other people have gotten it and it seems to be working okay. They were even like, none of the other vehicles in our fleet are doing this. We don't know what's happening. And it was like, oh, that update, that really important update.
This is like when Tesla gave me a Model X. I was supposed to go to the Gigafactory opening. I said, can I get a Model X to drive there? They're like, oh, that's a good idea. Let's give all the journalists a Model X. But the Model X they gave me, the press department was supposed to take it. and the press department got in my Model X. So they gave me
back when Tesla still had a press department.
Yeah. And so they gave me a pre-production Model X that like slammed the door down on my videographer. Like the door wouldn't close anymore. So it would just beep all the time. It was just like, I end up calling the press person at Tesla and saying, hey, she's like, well, what's going on? Are you driving with your seatbelt off? I'm all, no, that's just the car telling me the door won't close all the way. And the press person was like, wait, what's the serial number on that? And I gave it to him and they're like, oh, you're not supposed to have that car.
Mistakes have been made. Well, I don't know how I ended up with this one, this Blazer EV that had issues, but they say that all the issues were because of that update. I could have gotten another one. I mean, they were ready. They're like, we'll bring you another car. We'll put it on top of one of your other loans, not to mess up anything else you're having. We'll just give you another one so you can drive it. We're really, really sorry. They were super apologetic and they were super prompt about responding to it. And I don't have any real reason to believe that it wasn't that software update issue, because everything I was seeing when I started looking to see what other people had experienced was that. So super frustrating. I can't imagine if you were an owner and you had that happen, you'd be thinking, what have I done buying this thing? But hopefully everybody out there has received the update. If you drive in a Blazer EV and it's still doing weird stuff, you didn't get the update. So,
well, the notable thing about this is that this massive update that they pushed out was not done via an over-the-air update. You had to actually take the car to the dealer, which is why the one you were driving did not get updated. The fleet company forgot to send it to the dealer to get updated.
Which is funny and sad. And mistakes happen. And, you know, I'm not upset or anything. I'm more just one of those. And like, I was driving it for a point going, wow, if this is the fixed version, what was this like before they fixed it? Because this is disaster. But other than those things, which they fixed, drove the Chevy Blazer EV, was actually nice and roomy. We put a ton of luggage in the back of that thing, surprisingly, because we came back with very many people and we had huge bags and small bags and we shoved it for, there were five of us in that thing. We shoved everything into there and it was just fine. So it actually does have a really nice amount of cargo room and a huge wide opening. Like when you look at this from the butt, it is very wide, and the benefit to looking at it from the butt is that you can put a ton of cargo in there. So I did appreciate the cargo capacity on this. Driving it, it was fine. It's not especially engaging. I mean, it was a fine drive. I didn't think it was something that I was like, wow, this is incredible. It does what you expect an EV to do. You know, you have that strong acceleration because you get the torque so all at once. So you have that, you know, you mash the pedal and boom, it's going to go. It has the coolest light show. Have you guys both driven this and charged this? Have you charged this, I guess, is the question.
No.
I have not charged a Blazer. I drove it in December at the media drive.
Okay.
But I haven't had one since.
Okay. Charging it? It puts on the fanciest light show when it's charging. You know, sometimes it'll like a car will just do like a bloop and let you know it's charging and then it's calm and you'll just see like a blinking light on the dash or something. Oh no, this one is like bloop the whole time, front and back. There is a light show happening, letting you know that it's charging. Looks really super cool. Fun fact, your neighbors will think that you have accidentally somehow left your car on and might knock on your door to tell you something.
Oh. At 2 o'clock in the morning?
No, not 2 a.m. It was in the evening, but it's like, hey, he's like, it looks like your lights are on or something. I'm like, oh no, it's just charging. So it does confuse people. And I also do find now the whole thing with the turning it off and whether sometimes you can just hop right out if you hop out quickly. And if not, you need to click the little turn vehicle off button before you get out of the car. That did throw me for a second, even once I realized how it worked and realized what was happening, because I had driven it for a little bit before I took it to the airport for that fiasco. But it genuinely feels like the kind of thing, like if you don't think it's not a button, it's sort of like an in the touch screen. It's sort of tiny and like turn vehicle off. If you don't know that's there, you're going to be sitting there in that car staring at things thinking, where's a button? I know if I get out, it's still on. I feel like if you ever valet this car, you want to be like, dude, by the way, look right there when you park the car. And that's how you turn it off. Cause it was a little hard to find. But the interior was the ones you drove. Was it red? Was it red? Like it was so yes. Red. It's called Adrenaline Red. That is the most descriptive colors, like wham, in your face red. And it's not just like a little red trim on the seats, maybe a little red trim on the dash. It is red everywhere. There's red on the seats. There's red on the dash. There's red on the side door panels. There's red on the center console. And it's the front and the back. There's so much red in this car. And even around the air vents, which sort of have that like cockpit style kind of thing going where they make you think of an airplane. They're like really round and they have all this texture to them. Red in there just because we could put more red on it. So there's just red everywhere. I'm not generally speaking a huge fan of Chevy interiors. I think sometimes they're sort of meh. They're not horrible. They're just not especially exciting. This is one of the better interiors that I've seen from Chevy. I'm like, do this kind of level of a detail and cool materials and differences in texture and everything. Do this in all of your vehicles, Chevy, and people will be very happy. So I liked driving it. I found it comfortable. I found it responsive. I was really impressed with the cargo. Like I said, I had a lot of problems, but absolutely Chevy put it down to that software update, and I'm sure that's what it is because it seemed to fit everything. And the only other thing that I had a hard time with, and we were talking about this before we started, there's no Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, and as an iPhone user, I was cranky about that.
Dun, dun, dun.
Did you pair your phone and... Try to use some of the stuff over Bluetooth?
Yeah, it was not. I just wanted to say, have my directions on my phone looking like the directions on my phone and have my Apple CarPlay on the screen. Although I should be fair, I'm not entirely sure if I was more aggravated or I was more aggravated that Russ wouldn't stop complaining about the fact that he was aggravated with the fact that he couldn't get the Apple CarPlay because it didn't have it. He spent a few minutes fighting with me to say, like, I can't find it. I'm like, it's not there. He's like, but where is it? I'm like, no, I mean, it's like not there.
It's literally not there.
It doesn't exist. You can keep pushing buttons on the screen. You're never going to get it to work. It doesn't exist. I like CarPlay.
A choice?
Yeah, And I just
dun, dun,
are you an Apple Maps user or Google Maps or Waze?
It's Apple Maps.
Okay.
So
I started using Apple Maps because Google Maps has gotten so bad in the past few months. Same. It's just like, what are you doing? Google Did you lay Maps, everyone off? You, what is going on?
It does weird things. And Apple Maps, I love how you can just be like, okay, I'm going to point A, but I would like to add in this coffee shop in the middle of the route. Yes, please. Thank you. It's just very easy to navigate. I'm used to it. And so I miss it. And I think, honestly, at this point, if a vehicle didn't have Apple CarPlay, it would be, and I was frustrated enough that I'm like, you know what? I would have to really think long and hard to get a vehicle that didn't have it because I miss that. I feel like it's very intuitive and very easy. And to not, I want the same ecosystem everywhere. I don't have to learn a different one. I don't have to function differently when I get in my car. And it requires me to function differently. So sorry, Chevy, not a fan, but I love your interior.
Okay, fair enough.
So,
how much was the Blazer?
I'm gonna tell you, I didn't have the Monroney because they just came and whisked it away, so I didn't get a chance to check it. But I had the I'm sorry, I should have had this pulled up, but I had the RS, which has all-wheel drive, and the price on that is officially, it was $60,215. They lowered the pricing at one point by a huge chunk. Now it's $54,595, and it's eligible for the $7,500 tax credit. So this is the middle one. The RS is in the middle. The LT is at $51,95, and then the RS all-wheel drive is at $56,170. So this is sits in the middle of the lineup. It's not exactly cheap. I mean, $50,000 even. I mean, you get the $7,500 tax credit, but I don't.
It's still expensive.
It's still a lot. It's not, it still has that problem that so many EVs have. They're not as affordable. They're not as affordable as anyone needs them to be to make them an easy sell.
And we have had a complaint from a listener that we haven't been doing the destination charge game.
Oh yeah.
Oh weeks. Gosh. I don't really know. I don't have them on running. I'm seriously, guys. Like,
just make one up.
What is it? Wait, I would have had it if I had, they had not whisked it away due to problems before I prepped as I normally would prep.
I'm going to say 1600.
I don't have it in front of me. It doesn't list. Does it list?
Well, I'm going to take my guess at 1601 before I'll look it up for you.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm saying 1601.
I
feel like I have.
Okay. Wait.
Let's see.
Well, you should guess too. You don't know.
Oh, what was it? What are our guesses? 1601.
1601. So I'm out.
I'm gonna go.
You should say a dollar.
I'm going to go dollar because he told me.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Probably close in the 16s. I think you're pretty right.
Summary.
Product information. I know.
Destination charge. Oh, Nicole wins.
How much?
$1,395.
I really thought it was going to be like 14 or so. That was what I kind of thought. I win.
So you had the all-wheel drive, right? Not yes.
The RS all-wheel drive is the one that I had, which was the.
Yeah. So that's actually less powerful than the rear-wheel drive version. The mm-hmm. rear drive has 340 horsepower. The all-wheel drive only has 280.
So if you want the extra horsepower.
Or 288, you know. I should say.
But I don't feel like, it didn't feel like it was lacking. I mean, I drove it back and forth to Boston a couple of times in really heavy rush hour traffic, the kind where you need to be able to have that kind of the power and the responsiveness to dart in between cars because Boston at rush hour. And I never felt like it was underpowered. I never thought like, man, I really wish that I had a better had more performance than what I have. So I was pleased with the performance. I didn't have any issues with that at all.
Yeah, I think the issue I had when I drove it in December was, you know, I drove the rear wheel drive one first,
mm-hmm.
which is it's more powerful, but it's also it's rear drive. So the single motor is on the rear axle. Mm-hmm. If you get the all wheel drive, it's actually, they call it E all wheel drive. So it's actually configured more like a typical front wheel drive crossover where, you know, your primary power is sent down through the front wheels, and then it only sends some torque to the rear wheels when it, you know, when it needs some extra traction.
Mm-hmm.
So most of it is going through the front wheels. So it's not so much that the power level was not adequate, but it felt more like a front wheel drive car. The rear drive feels more lively because, you know, when you get on it, you know, you can actually get the back end to come around just a little bit, you know, to help turn the car in. And it feels more nimble and sporty than the front wheel drive. The front wheel drive understeers more. It's just not, or the rear, the all wheel drive, I mean, understeers more. It just didn't feel as much fun to drive.
Okay. That's fair. I didn't compare. I only had the one.
Yeah.
So I could not compare.
Okay.
So that was my Blazer EV experience, but I had another vehicle. I have another one to talk about because they took this one a little bit early because they like, what the heck is going on? So I ended up unexpectedly with a Hyundai Kona. For just a short little hot minute, I had the Hyundai Kona. But since I had it for a little bit, I figured I'd talk about it. So Hyundai Kona. I did like the Kona. It was unexpected. It was very small. And I actually honestly panicked for just like a half a minute because I had a lot of people to bring around. I'm like, oh my God, am I going to fit everybody in this? Because it looks small. It looks really small from the outside. So what we discovered was not as small as you think. And as long as you put your 6-foot person not behind your other 6-foot person, you're good. You have to make sure.
Stagger the passengers.
So initially, my daughter's boyfriend is over 6 feet and so is Russ. And so he went to get in behind Russ. He's like, no, I'm on the other side. He went to get in behind me. Because if he sat on the same side as Russ, there was like not even close to enough leg room on there. But I like the Kona. I think the Kona is a good little car. And I had the N-line trim, which I like the N-line. It's kind of fun because it's not the N. Like, I feel like.
Oh, it's like the GT line and then there's the GT. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is confusing to normal people because you're like, wait, don't I have the N? I'm like, no, you have the N-line. Which is not the same thing.
I don't know why they do that.
I think they just do it to mess with people.
It's for the people that want to look like they got an N but don't want to deal with the extra performance.
This is BMW and Mercedes fault.
Yes, BMW M Sport.
M Sport, AMG, AMG trim level, but not an AMG. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I find that a little bit like frustrating because then you're trying to. You think you're getting one thing and it just feels like it should be fancy. I'd imagine people who are really trying to buy this don't get confused, but I'm like, come on guys, don't name them so close together that it is actually confusing. Don't do that to people. But it does make it look snazzy. I enjoyed driving it. I mean, again, it's a smaller car. It's not super roomy, but the same thing, we had this because we were doing a lot of back and forth. I again had to fit a lot of stuff in there. And I had a moment where I thought we might not be able to take this car because it's tiny and we had really big luggage. Nope, still fit the really big luggage in the back, like gigantic suitcase, like overweight. So they put the extra sticker on it at the airline, like big, heavy suitcase. And we had 3 carry-ons and bags and everything and still fit it all in. A little bit of like Tetris to get it like all in there, but we did fit everything in there. And I enjoy driving it. And I think it looks nice. I liked the, I like how they've done the screens and things in the front. I like that you have your little digital instrument cluster, and there's like a nice big infotainment screen. The only thing that I was not real keen on was the gear shift. It's like this big, weirdly knobby gear shift. I know. I have to find
Weirdly knobby.
Weirdly knobby. It was just
weirdly knobby.
Weirdly knobby. So that was a little bit weird. But I did. I mean, I did enjoy driving the car. I only had it for like 2 days, so I got a really short drive time in it. And one of it has one of my favorite features, though, in Hyundai's. So you have the center console, and it's a big empty space. It has two little circles, so you can see where the cups go. And when you put your cup in, when you press on it, a little thing goes whoop and comes out and sort of like hugs it to keep it in its little spot. Or you can push a button to make that come out, which is great because then if you have drinks in there, you have some place to hold your drinks. But if you don't have drinks in there, you have a spot to just put whatever you want to put in there, your keys, your giant wallet, whatever it is that you choose to stow away in there. So I thought this was, I enjoy driving it. And this is more affordable. The Kona N line is $32,175. So when you think about the difference between what you're paying for the Blazer. Now it's bigger. You do get more size, but it's just like, wow, you could have this for like about $20,000 less. That's a,
you can get the Kona Electric for like 34.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's, you're like, and it's that kind of thing that makes you look at it and go, I don't know. Oh, a little tough. A little tough sound. I don't know what to do with that. I can't sell that. I'm sorry. I can't do it. So what are we going to go for? I'm ready. Do you want to do the destination?
I'll go first.
Okay, go.
$11.95.
Oh, $11.96.
Oh, Robbie wins because it's $13.75.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm a winner.
You're a winner. Woohoo.
Got cats.
And his cat is like, keeps walking in front of
us. I have two of them are in here right now. The third one left right at the beginning of the, he's like, I'm out.
I look down at my notes and I look back up and I just see this tail wafting across the screen. I'm like, what just happened? So I like the Kona N line. I think it's nice to drive. It's kind of fun that it has the extra styling, even though it doesn't have this crazy performance to go along with it. It still is a responsive vehicle. It's still easy to drive. You can get it with, it's a 1.6 liter turbo. So it moves, it scoots, gets out of its own way. And I appreciate that. So I thoroughly enjoyed my very, very brief time with the old Kona.
The old Kona.
The old Kona. Yes.
So I have a feeling we're getting smaller and smaller vehicles as we go along here, at least up to a point. Smartphones have gotten way more expensive over the past decade, and all it takes is one impact on a hard floor to make you wish you had spent a few bucks to put a case on it. Going online without ExpressVPN is like not having a case for your phone, and it only costs a few dollars a month. Nicole, Robbie, and I travel a lot for our work, and we spend a lot of time in hotels, coffee shops, airplanes, and of course, the Delta Sky Club. Connecting to the Wi-Fi in any public places with shared Wi-Fi puts your data at risk because bad actors could be intercepting what you send and using it to steal from you. It only takes some cheap hardware to intercept Wi-Fi data, and even a smart preteen can do it. Hackers can make up to $1,000 per victim selling personal information on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops the bad guys by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. ExpressVPN uses state-of-the-art encryption that would take a supercomputer up to a billion years to crack. I have ExpressVPN on all my devices, including a MacBook Pro, Windows laptops and desktops, and Android and iOS phones and laptops or tablets. When I want to be secure, I just launch the app, click once to connect, and my data is secure. As I said, I travel a lot for my work, and I have to connect to countless public Wi-Fi networks in many countries. I have ExpressVPN on all my connected devices so that whoever else is on the same network can't see any of my data. That's important because I often have to check banks, credit card accounts, and transmit client data that might be sensitive, as well as filing articles on news that might be under embargo. ExpressVPN protects all of it, and I've been paying for my own account for years. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. That's ExpressVPN.com/wheelbearings. expressvpn.com/wheelbearings, and you can get an extra 4 months for free. expressvpn.com/wheelbearings.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So what did you have, Robbie?
Well, I had a small vehicle. I had the Fiat 500e, the teeny tiny little electric Fiat. Remember the old Fiat 500e, the best Fiat? It was really the best Fiat. I leased a Fiat 500, just a regular one, a long time ago because the engine in my WRX exploded, you know, as they do. And my wife was in school. We didn't have a lot of money, and you could lease it for like $120 a month. And I was like, boom, done. And so I've had a relationship with the Fiat 500. The 500E, I liked it, but it is very much – there are a lot of sort of caveats around this vehicle. Like, you're buying this vehicle because, A, you live in a city. B, you want something small. C, you want something stylish. You're not really thinking about, what's the price comparison to something else in the market? You know, what's the range? What's this? What's that? That's not a thing you're thinking about at all. I drove this thing around. I drove it down to, I actually drove it to a GM event way down near San Jose and back. And I got back with 10 miles on it. And I was like, fine with me. It has a EPA estimated range of 149 miles. Which, that's pretty much it. if you drove around the city, you probably get more because you're going to do a lot more stopping. But it only has like a 42 kilowatt hour capacity battery. So it's just a teeny tiny little battery. And it charges at 85 kilowatts. So, yeah, it's like kind of the same issue you have when you had the Mini SE, where you plugged it in at a DC fast charge and you walked away and 20 minutes later it was pretty much done. That's the
advantage of a small battery. It doesn't take long to charge.
Yeah, it's just like boop, done. I drove it around. I'd come home, I'd plug it in at night. Did I even charge it at a DC fast? I don't even think I charged it at a DC fast charging station. I drove the thing around all week. It was fun to drive because it's small and it's got a little EV, you know, motor. It's not necessarily insanely quick. It has 117 horsepower, 162 pound feet of torque, which is more than adequate for a car of that size. It's not a speed demon that just go flying off the line like other vehicles. But it does, you know, it gets out of its own way. It's fun to drive around town. It's fun to drive on the freeway. And there is a moment when you're going over the Bay Bridge where a third lane just appears. And out of nowhere. And so everyone who goes over the Bay Bridge all the time, they know where that third lane is. I could get to that third lane before anyone else because I had this tiny little car and I felt like a superhero. It was easy to park. I actually liked it as a little drive around town car. I think, you know, a car with 150 miles is your second car. If you're not going on, it's a great little idea. Even if your second car, if your other car is gas or your other car is an EV, it's just a fun little like cruise around town vehicle. I really liked it. That said, that doesn't mean there's some issues. For one, there's only one cup holder in the front and one cup holder in the back. And the cup holder in the front, it folds down from the center console. So I like Diet Coke. And I like fountain Diet Coke. So I got a medium Diet Coke. The problem is that the cup holder like was just the right size for that medium Diet Coke. But when you pulled it up, it kept pulling up on the lever. So you couldn't just pull the Coke out. You had to like hold down. You're driving. The cup holder would come up. It was just like, oh, come on. And then I'm looking at the center console and there's a big hole in there. And I'm like, you know, you could have just put some cup holders in here. So that's that's an after party thing you're going to buy. If you buy this car, you're never going to use, you're going to, that horrible cup holder. No. Also, the passenger side seat, you can't adjust the height. my brother is the same height as me. He's 6'3". He was visiting, and he was sitting there. He's like, I can't make my seat go down. So he's kind of like this. His head was kind of hitting the side of the vehicle. So why just have the little lever that goes down. There's all these like weird little like, hey, we saved a little money here, but here's this cool thing we did, like the little like wings on the side that have the Italian flag in them, like that. Oh, that's kind of a cool thing.
Which sound did the one you had play
when you get to 20? It made like a, it had like a little jingle that it played. I don't know what it was, but when you turned it on and off, it sounded like Christmas time.
Yeah, because there's I guess there's three different trims of the 500E, and I'm not sure which one, but one of them apparently plays the Italian national anthem.
Maybe it was the Italian national. It was the red version. I feel like that's the one they have here in the United States right now, is the 500E red. But yeah, I would play a little song, and I was like, "What is this Christmas? It sounded like a Christmas song." But when you're driving the car, you know, from 0 to 20, you know, it has to make that noise, the regulated noise, so you don't, mm-hmm. you know, surprise pedestrians and bicyclists. But when you get to 20, it plays like a little jingle on the outside of the car, but it only does it one time when you first turn on the car. So you have to turn the car off and then do it again, and it plays like a little song. I'm like, what is going on? So it's like a little dance party for everyone who's around you when you hit 20 miles an hour. What else did I have issues with? I think that was kind of it. It had CarPlay, so that was nice. It had wireless CarPlay. No, it's a fun little car to drive around. Again, this, and it's not going to be for everyone. This is not going to be a vehicle that takes America by storm. I think, you know, I think like the other 500, the Fiat 500, there's going to be a niche market. It feels better. It feels a bit more. It feels, what's a better way? Better well-built? Well-built?
More well-built?
Better built?
More solid?
More better, well-built. More solid? Better built? Better built than the old 500.
I like better well-built.
Better well-built. Let's see. I think I stuck a pizza, an extra large pizza in the trunk, and it fit. So that was good.
The seat up or down?
With the seat up. Yeah. Wow. I didn't have to put the seats down. Yeah, I could put groceries back there. I think people really, at some point, we all decided we need a lot of room all the time. And what's funny is that when we were coming back from Japan, I was going to pick this up at the airport, and the fleet manager's like, oh, I don't know if that's going to be enough space for you, you know, with all your stuff coming back from Japan. And I was like, oh, that's a good point. And then I got there, I'm like, oh, this would have been fine. I could have folded the rear seats down. It would have been fine. We just had two roller bags, two backpacks, and a big bag that we bought in Japan to bring all of our random toys back and candy, mostly candy, all our candy back. That said, yeah, hold on, let me get the price. I have it on $32,500. I feel like it's about $4,000 too much. I feel like it's a little.
How much should it be? You want it to be under?
I want it to be under 30. It's 32,500.
Especially, you know, since it's, you know, only 149 miles of range.
Yeah. And so, but the thing is, if you're looking at like value to price, or like range value to price,
you're getting Italian music.
And Italian style and Italian music. And it's fun to drive around because it's a small little EV. And who knows when the mini SE is going to show up at this point, with now, thanks to the tariffs on Chinese EVs. So, this might be the little small EV we have for quite a while. That said, you know, 150 miles, I think for it, I think I told a story about how we saw an old 500E parked somewhere, and it had a for sale sign. It was $5,000. My wife, who drives a Kona EV that we own far more than I do, she's like, well, how much? Well, it's $5,000. She's like, oh, can we get rid of the Kona and get that? We're on lease. I'm like, well, now we still have a few more months on the Kona. She's like, I'm like, but that car only probably has about 80 miles of range. She's like, yeah, that's more than enough. And that's just from living with an EV for 2.5 years, where you just sort of realize, you're like, oh, when am I driving more than 80 miles in a day? So, you know, when are you driving more than 100 miles a day? I drove, you know, the one time that I had this vehicle, and I drove it everywhere because I love driving small cars. That when I drove down to San Jose and back, and I was like, oh, well, you know, when I get there, it'll have like 10-15 miles. And I got here and it was fine. I was like, and I wasn't really concerned. I'm like, well, if I have to pull over.
If you need to go more than 80 miles, you know, you can just pull out the Jaguar X-Type.
Oh my God, that Jaguar. If I need to go more than 80 miles, I'm not definitely not taking the Jaguar X-Type. Yeah, no, I think it's, you know, it's not that I don't know. I do know. The U.S. public, for the most part, does not want a small car that has a limited range, period. That's probably a little bit pricey. It is a niche market. I think a Stellantis, Fiat, they understand that. They know who's going to buy this. People who live in San Francisco, people who live in LA, people who live in Chicago, people who live in New York. Like someone in Kansas City, you know, you'll sell four in Kansas City, but you're not going to sell a whole lot of them in Wichita. So
just a small fleet of little red Fiats running around Wichita.
Yeah. Yeah. But I get it. It's, you know, it's a fun little car. I really enjoy driving it around. I do think for the price, there are some things, you know, the fact that you can't put the side, you know, the passenger seat down, it's just high, and the weird cup holder situation.
I found the cup holder thing really weird, and I drink fountain Diet Cokes too, and I didn't try that, but I'm like, oh, that would have driven me nuts.
I was like driving on the freeway. I'm like, what is, God damn it. I'm just getting angry. I'm like, okay, here's the thing I hate about this car.
Like, as you're describing it, I'm like, oh, is an avid Diet Coke drinker from McDonald's, because that's my favorite fountain version.
And it's the least expensive.
It is. And I'm like, oh, that would drive me crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, so there's that. That said, you know, it looks cool. I like the look of the Fiat 500 a lot. The interior looks cool. It's, you know, it's style. It's styling. It's an Italian car. What are you going to do?
That's what being Italian's all about.
That's what being Italian's all about. If they had a little key truck that did that, that was 150 miles, I'd be, take my money.
Yeah.
If they had a little truck that was the same size, I would throw all my money. I'm like, yeah, here's $32,000 for it. Here you go. Take it. They're like, that's more than the Maverick. Don't care. So here we go. What do y'all think the
1095.
I'm gonna go $1.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. It's very expensive. It's $15.95.
Oh, I win.
It's a Stellantis product. Of course it is.
It's a Stellantis
product. Automatically just made it something outrageous and you'd have been right.
Yeah. Hold on. I wonder what's the curb weight? It's really light. It's like 6,000 pounds or something.
Say is the destination more than the actual weight of the vehicle?
No, that would be funny. I told you the 87 or 85 kilowatts, 42 kilowatts. Somewhere in here they have the curb weight.
Apparently it's 2,952 pounds.
That's what it is. It doesn't weigh anything.
So an entire EV that weighs the same as the battery in a Hummer EV.
Yeah. And you could, that's the problem is that the bed of the Hummer is really small.
But you could probably put it in the bed of a Silverado EV.
Oh, yeah. And then you have the midgate and you could squeeze back there. I do love the midgate. I haven't driven a Silverado. I saw one last week. I do love the midgate. I wish that there was a smaller, what was the Chevy Love? I wish they brought the Love back.
There's actually a Chevy Love not far from here. It's brown and it has like the multicolored stripes on the side, you know, very 70s look to it. And, you know, it's got lots of rust, but it's amazing how tiny this thing is. The Chevy Love makes a Maverick look huge.
It's just so tiny. Yeah. It's like when I saw a CRX next to I think it was the Toyota Yaris, and the Yaris looked like a monster next to
Yeah.
But yeah, Chevy Love, bring me a new, bring back the Chevy Love, have the midgate, or that surfing Chevy that GM showed me in their design studio like a year or so ago. The one that, yeah, that thing was pretty cool.
Okay. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats,
mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media.
Well, last week you had the BMW i5, Robbie. This week I had the BMW 530i xDrive. So basically the same car, but with a 2-liter four-cylinder turbo instead of electric motors and a battery. And I really like this car. I like the i5 better, but I like the 530. I like the design of the new 5 series overall. I think it's a good design. The one I had was in this, interesting, what do they call it? Cape York green metallic. It's kind of a pale green metallic color, which I thought was really attractive. And you know, best of all, you know, since it's a BMW, it wasn't one of the 32 shades of silver or gray that they offer. And then the interior was, this Viganza perforated quilted, brown espresso brown interior. Espresso brown leather, which looked awesome. Love that color of the leather interior. So the 530i is the, for at least for North America, is the base version of the 5 series that they offer here. And the xDrive, of course, is the all-wheel drive variant of that. So that's a 2-liter turbo. It's 255 horsepower, 295 foot-pounds of torque. More than enough performance for this car. It's got all it really needs. So, you know, the car is not lightweight, you know, weighs 4,000 pounds. Still, it's good. I was quite pleased with the performance. It's also got a 48 volt mild hybrid system, so it does auto stop start. But you know, because it's a 48 volt system, it restarts very quickly. It'll keep the engine off for a good long period of time at traffic lights and things like that, which helped to get 32 miles per gallon, which for a big two-ton luxury sedan with all wheel drive. Was nearly as much as we get with our Honda Civic. And so I was very impressed with that 32 miles per gallon. Great, great combination. Of course, the one that I had, like the Kona that Nicole had, the M Sport package on it, which means it kind of had the M look without the M performance. Not quite as aggressive looking as an M5. Certainly nowhere near as aggressive looking as the new M5, which will be revealed, I think, next week after, something like that. It looks good. It's sharp. It's 21 inch alloy wheels. One of the nice things with the M Sport package is it had this gray blue ash trim inside, so it's an open pore wood trim, and sort of a gray ash, but with a blue tint to it that looked really good. Also had the M Sport suspension, which was fine. Wasn't harsh or anything like that. I took this thing out to go to the lake last week to see the Aurora. Driving down a dirt road to get to the little beach at the lake that we hang out at all the time in the summer, in the dark. It did fine on that. So it was very pleasant to drive. I really enjoyed this car.
Are you telling me you took a car off road and it didn't need a lift kit?
Yes, I did. I mean, it was a road that was unpaved. Had a few potholes in there that I was, the M Sport suspension, I was easily able to evade and skirt around those. Is there something wrong, Robbie? Oops. I don't think he can hear us. I really like the 530i. If I was buying a new 5 series, I would probably get the i5 instead, because I like that even more. But if not the i5, then I would definitely go for this one. It had full glass moonroof, the big M Sport brakes with bright blue calipers. The infotainment system worked well. You know, it's BMW's new big curved glass screen. Still has the iDrive knob, which will be going away at some point in the next few years. It's got vents that you can control with a little lever on the dashboard, and direct the airflow where you want without having to hit the touchscreen. Always a good thing. It's got support for wireless Android Auto and CarPlay. So all the good stuff is there. Base price on the 530i xDrive, $60,200 with all the options. Came to a grand total of $70,745. Guesses on the destination charge?
Oh, man. $14.95.
I'm going to go for a dollar.
Nicole wins because,
yes!
You see, and rather than trying to hide their high prices behind, you know, the hidden destination charges, BMW just puts it right up front and charges you a reasonable fee for delivery. So it's $995 to ship it from Munich to wherever you are in the United States.
Can you still do the thing where you go to Munich and pick it up there and drive it around Europe and then have it shipped?
I think you can. I'm not sure, but I think you can do that. They may have stopped it during the pandemic. I don't know, but I think they do that. We'll have to check into that.
I know so they're still delivering cars like that, but I was wondering if U.S. buyers could do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to ask BMW if they still do that. I'll send them a note. All right. So that's the 530i xDrive. In the wake of Tesla firing and now perhaps maybe rehiring some of their supercharger team, there were some reports, you know, speculating that some companies were rethinking their shift to the NACS or SA J3400 charging connector. I don't think anybody's actually going to reverse course and stay with CCS. I think that would be stupid.
Everyone's moving to NACS, and we're just like, because it doesn't belong to Tesla anymore. That's the other thing.
Yeah. Belongs to SAE. It belongs to everyone now.
It belongs to me.
Yes.
But mostly everyone. Doesn't belong to me at all. I don't do anything with that. That's not my job.
But EVgo announced this week that they are doubling down on their commitment to begin NACS deployments this year. EVgo is one of the larger non-Tesla charge point operators in the U.S. And they are starting to put J3400 connectors on their chargers across the country. They, as part of the announcement, they also announced that overall utilization on their network in the first quarter of this year was 19%, up from 9% in the first quarter of 2023. So, you know, almost 20% of the time, one fifth of the time now, their chargers are actually in use charging a vehicle. Wow. Which, you know, for a charge point operator, utilization is critically important to actually trying to make a viable business out of it. You know, these chargers are expensive. You know, DC fast chargers can cost, you know, anywhere from, depending on the power levels, anywhere from $75,000 to $250,000 each, not including installation, which can add hundreds of thousands of dollars more. So if a company is going to make that investment to put in these chargers, they want to know that people are actually going to use them and, you know, buy electricity from those chargers.
They put in 350 EVgo stations behind the Sprouts near where I live. And before that, they had like some 150. They had the old EVgo ones in. So they put the new ones in. And initially I was like, oh, no one's using those. And now every time I drive, I'm like, oh man, they're using all the time. It's also like right next to us to a store. So you're just like, oh, that's the store I'll actually go to. Whereas like the one store that I go to doesn't have charging, but like two other different stores do. And I'm like, come on, come on, my store, come on.
Well, according to EVgo, nearly 40% of their chargers, their DC chargers now, are 350 kilowatts, which is double what it was a year ago. So they are rapidly upgrading their chargers. And they're starting to install NACS connectors. So I think almost all of their chargers have two cables on them. So what we'll probably see is, you know, replace one of those with a NACS connector. The other one will stay with CCS for the time being.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then there'll be the one CCS CHAdeMO in the corner. There's exactly. always the CHAdeMO one, the 50 kilowatt CHADeMO one in the corner for the Leaf.
The occasional Leaf driver will pull up and use that.
He's like, hey.
You know, EVgo's moving ahead with the NACS transition. So automakers, don't even think about backing away from that. That would be dumb.
Oh yeah, it's too late to back away from that. Even if you don't, even if the Tesla network's falls apart, everyone else is already on it.
Yeah. So this past week was Google I/O, Google's big developer conference. Did you know that Rivian's infotainment system is actually running Android Automotive? Even though they don't support CarPlay or Android Auto, the operating system under their infotainment system is actually Android. Which they've never publicly acknowledged before. But they acknowledged it this week because Rivian is going to be the first automaker to add support with Android Automotive for Google Cast, which is, you know, the Chromecast protocol, which means that, you know, if you have Google Cast is supported in apps on both both Android and iPhones. So if you have an app that has, you know, a media app that has support for casting, and within the next few weeks, while you're sitting waiting for your Rivian to charge, or just sitting in your Rivian for whatever reason, you will be able to pull up your phone and cast, say, Netflix or YouTube or HBO Max or Hulu directly to the screen in your Rivian, and control it from your phone, and it'll play on the screen in your Rivian. And in fact, actually, you won't have to do that for YouTube because they're also getting a native YouTube app that will be on Rivian vehicles in the next couple of months. So big update for Rivian.
I get so upset when I go to a hotel and it doesn't have Chromecast.
Yeah.
That's the only time I watch TV in a hotel. I turn on the TV. If it doesn't have, just turn it off. I'm like, I guess I'm watching Bob's Burgers on my iPad.
I actually, for a long time, I kept a Chromecast in my suitcase, in my bag of chargers and cables and stuff like that. I also had a Chromecast in there that sometimes I would, reach around behind the TV in the hotel room and find the HDMI port, plug that thing in there. And then I also had a little portable travel router because, the problem with a Chromecast is signing into a hotel network. But with this little portable travel router, I could set that up, and I could actually use that to go to the login page, to log into the captured portal that the hotels all have, sign in to the hotel, and then use that to feed the Wi-Fi to the Chromecast.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah. Honda had a briefing in Japan this week. They provided an update on their electrification plans. It sounds like, big thing that Honda is doing is they're moving more and more towards vertical integration with their electrification strategy. They recommitted to investing $64 billion, 10 trillion yen by 2030 on electrification. And by 2040, they want to be 100% EV or fuel cell vehicles. 40% by 2030. So they're moving ahead with this stuff and they're planning to launch a whole bunch of EVs.
Yeah, this is just like a super hardcore version of what I heard from Honda when I was there in October 2022 with the new CEO and the new head of EVs. And they were just like, we're going to do it. We that's where we're going to do this. And so this is just like, you know, because you can say we're going to do it, and then in 2 years, be like, I don't know. But Honda seems like they're going all in, and they have some pretty interesting things that they're doing. I was really interested in their, again, I'm still sort of interested in what they're doing with solid state, where they're like, oh, to reduce the dendrites, we're just smashing the hell out of out of it. They're just like, they have this big machine, these rollers, and they're like, they're doing a pilot at the time. They're hoping to go into pre-production, small scale production of it. So yeah, no, it'll be interesting. You know, I think the Prologue is sort of like, hey, there's the car we have right now, but going forward, it's going to be a Honda. And I think for people who are hardcore Honda and Toyota fans, what's happening, especially for Honda, is probably good news if you're looking to go EV, because, you know, you buy those cars because they're going to last 700 years.
Yeah.
And you're probably waiting for that car to like show up in the EV lineup. You're like, well, I've always owned a Honda. I would like to have a Honda Electric because it'll last until the end of time.
Will it really still, though? You think it'll last forever and ever and ever and ever?
The car will. The battery might not.
But yeah, the car will.
Although if they do manage to crack the code on solid state batteries, you know, and figure out how to mass produce them, because there's lots of companies that have done, you know, one or two solid state cells, but building them in high volumes is the thing nobody's figured out how to do yet.
Because they don't last very long, like the life. But you know that what we've learned from Tesla is that the degradation of most people's batteries isn't as bad as everyone thought. Everyone thought that's it's why people are using fewer and fewer modules in their battery packs, because they thought like, oh, you know, after 2 years, you know, how many batteries? And then they're looking at the data and are like, well, these things are sturdier than we anticipated.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, unlike your phone, you know, which has no cooling system for the battery and is constantly overheating if you're charging it too fast.
Or it's in the sun.
Yeah. It's sitting in the sun and baking the battery. Cars, apart from the Nissan Leaf, you know, all have liquid cooled batteries that, you know, they keep the temperature very tightly controlled in a fairly narrow band that is optimal for performance and life of the battery. And so, you know, after a decade, they're still getting, you know, 90% of their original capacity.
Which is pretty good, because they usually, after a decade, even your gas car isn't nearly as efficient as it was when you first got it, because, you know, mechanical things wear out.
Yeah, they do. And you know, it doesn't wear out. Electric motors. They last a long, long time.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting. Like, you can buy a recycled battery. I don't know. I'm very interested to see what happens in 15, 20 years with batteries, besides the recycling, like what the aftermarket situation is for things like that. Do batteries get so cheap that, you know, you could just buy it and swap it out? And, you know, is it a $2,000 thing now? Is it a $5,000? I mean, my friend had a Mini that needed a new transmission, and they quoted him like $5,000 to fix it. And I was just like, well, that's now. That's a thing that, like, I mean, I could do. He didn't need $5,000. I'm sure, you know, it's a lot of work to get a transmission out of a Mini, but I mean, if I could do it,
yeah,
give me a weekend, buddy. I'll take care of this. But yeah, where will batteries be at that point?
Well, there's a new mid-sized pickup truck going on sale soon in Mexico that we won't be able to get here in the U.S.
How many things we can't get? That's just like
we can't have nice things.
We can't get it.
So this is the BYD Shark.
I wonder, like, it's a shark.
It's got shark. I like the name the shark.
Does it have a midgate?
Does not have a
midgate. Way cooler than seagull.
Yeah. does not have a midgate, it's a plug-in hybrid midsize. It's similar to a Ranger or Colorado. 1.5 liter four-cylinder turbo with two electric motors that make a grand total of 430 total horsepower. 0 to 60 in about 5.7 seconds. Claimed 62 miles of electric only range, but
you know, given, you know, that this is a BYD, that's probably the Chinese test cycle.
Oh, so we're talking 40.
So in reality, it's probably about 35, 40 miles of electric range. But, you know, if you can get 35 miles of electric range out of a midsize pickup truck, you know,
that's pretty good.
And then still be able to go 528 miles in total on the tank of gas. That's not too shabby.
It's not too shabby.
That'll meet most people's daily driving needs.
Yeah.
5,500 pound towing, 1,800 pound payload capacity. So that's pretty impressive. And it's got vehicle to load capabilities. So let's see. BYD is saying they're not caring about the U.S. market. They don't have plans to go into the U.S. market, and especially now with the 100% tariff. But they do eventually want to build a plant in Mexico. But the Shark initially will be sourced from China for a number of markets, including Mexico, with a cost of a little over $50,000. So, you know, that's not far off the price of a well-equipped gas, you know, Toyota Tacoma or, you know, Ranger or Colorado.
I think I keep telling people, you're not going to get a $10,000 car in the United States. I'm sorry.
No.
Because just the safety of that.
You don't want the 10,000 car. You don't want that car. You think you want that car. You don't.
But the BYD Shark is definitely something people might want. Yeah. Or something similar to that.
I have family in Mexico. I'm just saying. I actually looked into like, what if I got a Mexican? Like, what's the rules? Like, what? How often do I have to go back to Mexico? Could I have it like registered to like a family member in Mexico and then just drive it around
to cheat and have one? I'm just visiting the U.S. I'm just here briefly.
I'm driving around to California with a Mexican license plate.
Yeah, I'm just here 97.9% of the time.
I'm out of I have 1.5% where I'm not here. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. So, did either of you watch the launch event for the Tesla Cybertruck back in November when they did their first deliveries?
Oh yeah, when they threw a softball weakly at the car, and then
yes, that one. Yeah.
Because the original one that I went to in person, they threw a metal ball and broke two windows. This time they got a softball and they tossed it lightly at the car. And then I said, you know, I could just go and do that at my Subaru and get the same effect. So just don't do that. Just don't. Why even bring that up? Because everyone could see it was a weak throw and it was a softball.
Tesla likes to make big claims. And one of the claims in the event, besides being bulletproof, is that the Cybertruck, the three-motor Cyber Beast version, could out-accelerate a Porsche 911 in a quarter mile while also towing a Porsche 911. And the guy who does the Engineering Explained YouTube channel about a month or so ago did a bunch of math, which is something that he does. He does all kinds of math on a whiteboard and proves things either true or false. And he did some math and also looked at the video that Tesla published. And one of the interesting things that if you watch the video carefully, you'll notice that the Cybertruck towing a 911 was actually only ahead. They only showed it being ahead of the other 911 that it was racing at the halfway point of the quarter mile, at the 1/8 mile mark. They never showed it actually crossing the end point of the quarter mile. Jeff did made some very reasonable assumptions that, you know, in order to do this, they would probably want to get the very slowest version of the 911, which is the base model 911 with a manual transmission, because that's actually slower than the PDK.
PDK and is quick.
He did all the math with the weights and the power and the torque and everything, and concluded that the Cybertruck could potentially beat the 911 in that 1/8 mile mark. That was realistic, but over the quarter mile, it would win. The Porsche would win, once it got launched and was really building up ahead of steam. So Motor Trend, Eric Tingwall from Motor Trend, borrowed a Cybertruck and a couple of 911s, and they took them to a drag strip and tried to reproduce what Tesla did. And I bet you could never guess what happened.
The Tesla lost. That was a great article. It was so much math in it. I was just like, this is the best. I haven't even watched the video. I just read the article, the math.
You should go. I'll put a link to the original video in the show notes. The Engineering Explained video. It's great. He does great stuff. He really explains stuff. He does all the math, but he really explains it well for.
Oh, Engineering Explained's an amazing. That guy is outstanding. He is so good at making like really complex things and presenting it in a way that like regular dum-dums like myself will understand.
So they did three runs of the 911 versus the Cybertruck towing a 911. And in the first run, the Cybertruck beat the Porsche at the 1/8 mile mark, but then lost over the quarter mile. And then on the second and third runs, the Porsche won consistently at the 1/8 mile and the quarter mile mark. So I'll have the link to the video in the show notes. But it's fun stuff. Fun to watch.
Like, why even do that? Why did they even do it?
Because most people are going to actually dig in and figure that out.
What if we said it's? I think at the original is like, oh, it'll be faster than a 911 or supercar or some goofiness that he said. And so he's like, what if we put it on a trailer? And they're like, well, sir, it won't win. He's like, what about if we just like do it the 1/8 of a mile because EV torque? Because in that instance, I mean, my Kona probably beat a Porsche for like if the first 10 feet.
I mean, none of this takes away from the fact that the Cybertruck is a silly fast vehicle. I mean, it will go 0 to 60 in 2.6 seconds.
Yeah.
But, it's just not faster than a 911.
While towing a 911, it just isn't like, why even have that? I just don't. Like, why make a thing that people can just go out and say, yeah, that's wrong.
Yeah. All right. Next year, BMW is going to start launching EVs based on its new dedicated Neue Klasse platform. This is going to use their sixth generation electric drive and battery technology, which includes new cylindrical cells. They're moving away from the prismatic cells that they've been using to cylindrical cells. They're 46 millimeter cells, similar to what Tesla uses on the Cybertruck, but they're actually a little bit longer, same diameter, but longer. And it's going to have an 800 volt architecture for the Neue Klasse.
Yay!
Woo-hoo. And one of the things that at the BMW annual meeting, Oliver Zipse, the CEO of BMW, talked about charging for the Neue Klasse and promised that it would be able to, in 10 minutes, you'll be able to add 186 miles of range from a suitable charger.
In 10 minutes.
186 miles in 10 minutes. Mm.
That would be nice.
That's a couple of hours of driving, depending on how rapidly you're driving, anywhere from 2 to 3 hours, at which point, you will probably need to stop, for a bio break anyway. And spend another 10 minutes, and then you can go another 186 miles.
See, that
because of all the Diet Coke.
Yes.
Nicole and I, there's a lot of stopping.
It's a Diet Coke freak. Let's just face it. We've had four large.
The BMW will even have a proper place to put your Diet Coke that doesn't
even
slip up
better
out of the way.
If it would just fit the Diet Cokes, but also has to fit them, Robbie. Like if you have two Diet Cokes and they're coupled or two toasts together, they fit, but then
the top. Yeah, but the top is hitting each other.
And the top comes. So, really, is it. How perfect is it? Are
they have an interference fit
each other off, or they're going to be a little tiny space you can still fit it in your tops? I mean, this is the kind of thing that we need to test, Robbie. Clearly,
I mean, that's
we
that's
have a little
real
gap
real,
like of this much in our
human use evaluation
between the two cup holders.
You see, that's ideal because does it
perfect?
Enough? Yeah,
because so, you have the sort of upside down cone. Right. I guess it's not upside down; it's still cone, no matter which way it's pointed.
It's just a cone.
It's tapered.
Tapered, yeah.
So yeah, I think we can reasonably assume that the Noia class vehicles will have reasonable cup holders in there that can be used. So 186 miles of range in 10 minutes coming to your Noia class next year.
See, that would make me that would make road tripping with an EV feel much nicer to me.
Yeah.
I did a road trip with the i4 and I just stopped and ate Mexican food.
Well,
I went from San Francisco to Yosemite, and I had a stop at one point at like a Walgreens or a Walmart. Walmart. And I ended up meeting the Rivian PR person while I was there. That was weird. and so I just kind of chatted with them. And then I went to Yosemite. I charged while I was at Yosemite. And then on the way, I went to Hanford to go to a family member's wedding. And then on the way home from Hanford to San Francisco, I just found a really good Mexican restaurant.
There you go. That works too.
But then you're like, the problem with EVs is that you think it's going to take longer than it actually does most times. See, as soon as you walk away, for whatever reason, if it's like a watched pot. As soon as you walk away, suddenly that charger's working great. And you're sitting there eating, and all of a sudden you're like, you have 10 minutes before you start getting out. Oh, God, you're just shoving food in your mouth. Shoving
burritos into your mouth too fast.
What's happening?
All right. Apparently in France, they have a new road safety campaign. Nicole, would you like to comment on this?
Okay, can I just tell you, I saw this and I actually brought it up. I was like, what the what? So the idea behind it is just terrible. This is awful, France. This is stupid. So the idea behind the campaign literally says, drive like a woman. That's the campaign. And the reason the idea behind it is, you know how people accuse women of being bad drivers? Well,
they're wrong.
They're wrong.
No, they're
and they're saying, no, like, women are better drivers, so you just drive like a woman, which they're trying to say it's actually better, but just by putting out the same stereotype that women drivers are crappy drivers, but not meaning to. I don't like it. I think it's a stupid thing.
84% of road deaths in France are caused by men. Maybe but just don't let dudes drive.
But the article that you linked to here, and I'm not sure what figures they pulled, but when you actually look at the campaign itself, like if you go to the French site, like dig through your Google links, some of the data they're using for this campaign is like over 10 years old. And I was going to write something about this, and my editor wisely pointed out, does that data still hold true? Because cars have changed so much in 10 years. How much has all of the safety and various things on cars that keep us from getting into accidents reduced the disparity between men and women drivers, even if men were super aggressive, are things preventing them from getting into accidents? And I did manage to find a few pieces of data that show that it has decreased over the years. Either way, I don't like this campaign. Don't like it.
The wrecks have decreased or the disparity has decreased?
It depended. So I was trying to find things that were from...
If they're still driving like jerks, they're still going to wreck eventually.
But the thing is, they're not...
even though there's fewer wrecks, like the percentage would be the same.
It was, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but say it was like, 80% of men were causing accidents and 20% of women. Now it was more like, it was closer. It was not this remarked difference. I think men were still 60-40
kind of thing.
Right. But it got closer. So you weren't like, oh my goodness, look at men are running everybody off the road. Women, we're such nice drivers. And they also had a really interesting point in this, and this isn't in there, is that men and women tend to drive different kinds of cars. If you look at what the registered driver cars, they more often drive trucks, men. It's just the state of the state. Women can drive whatever they want. Men can drive whatever they want. But if men are driving bigger vehicles and women are driving smaller vehicles, as a rule, if you bonk into each other, the guy in the bigger vehicle is going to turn out better than the guy in the smaller vehicle. So the woman's more likely to get hurt than the man because of the size of the car. Like, so there's other things, I guess, is what I'm getting at, than just men are aggressive.
So they're not just bad drivers. They're making bad decisions and purchases.
It's a complicated thing. Yeah, I feel like the campaign, I'm like, it's more complicated than that. And I just thought it was women are driving.
You can't do a campaign that says, hey, it's complicated.
Right. It's complicated. It doesn't work.
I'm not saying this is a good idea. I think it's the better idea. It's like
a woman, because then people be like, what? And yeah, so I'm like, come on, France. Get some real numbers in there and get some research. And yeah, because some of the data in that research was really old. And if you think about how much cars have changed, in 10 years. And it, like I said, it didn't account for, I actually talked to a guy, as a matter of fact, at the IHS, and I was trying to get information from him, and he was providing information, and he gave me some NHTSA links. And it is on this little to-do list, honestly, to actually see if I can figure out what the difference is and how much safety equipment has changed the disparity between men and women drivers and the accidents that they have.
But in France. But you got to call someone in France.
I got to call someone in France.
You need the French equivalent of the IHS.
You know what you need is you need a Carbuzz to send you to France.
Clearly, Roberto adds to list. Send Nicole to France. Okay.
Send Nicole to France. I don't know why that's a.
I don't know why I didn't start with that.
Yeah, because the only way you're going to find this out is if you go to France.
That's it. There's no other way of communicating with people in France. Getting the information online. Nope. You have to be in France to get that kind of
data. Because they don't answer email or anything like that.
After hours.
They don't use that in France, especially not from an American. So I will literally.
Oh, they're definitely not going to do it.
Those automatically get filtered out by the spam filters. Everything coming from the US.
Forget that.
Which is probably not a bad assumption.
If I were French, I wouldn't want the Americans emailing me. I'm just saying. It's like, oh, these guys again. No.
All right. Let's do one more story and then answer a couple of listener questions. Tim Kaniskis, until a couple of days ago was the CEO of the Dodge and Ram brands for Stellantis, has apparently retired after 32 years.
Yeah.
Tim was the guy, he was the mastermind behind the Hellcat, introducing the Hellcat V8.
He was a big deal.
Yeah. And then, he was all about muscle cars. Recently during the unveiling of the Dodge Charger Daytona, the production version of the Charger Daytona, which is the, electric muscle car, e-muscle car, that they're launching later this summer. They showed a video, which they then put up on YouTube, which did not go over particularly well. I was there at the backgrounder where they first showed this. We're sitting, a bunch of media sitting there in this room, and Tim's all smiles, and they're running this video, and we're looking at each other thinking, what the...
It was
it's hard to watch without him. I can't imagine watching that with him in the room.
They're like, it's so difficult to unpack everything that's going on in that video. But just the anger was one of the things. I'm like, what is happening? Why is this man so angry at his car that he's bringing out? And it was funny because like a week later, a few weeks later, or whatever, they had the Rivian event, which just felt like very joyful and like, hey, look at these cars that are come out if we don't go out of business. And the Dodge was like, we're just
angry powerhouse of a brander.
Yeah, like we got a copy of Maya 3D software from 2005. We're gonna do some. It's like, what is happening to this? Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in that video.
But it's, despite the video being bazonkers and everybody thinking, like, what the heck? What was happening here? I mean, he did do a lot for the brand. He was there for, like, 32 years. He worked for practically every division of the land of the brands. And, like, what he was at Chrysler, and then he was at Fiat Chrysler, and then he was at Stellantis. Like, he's lived through multiple.
He was there during the Daimler-Chrysler era.
Yes, Daimler. He's lived through multiple mergers and acquisitions, and he has not exited the company. So it's kind of amazing. He was there for a lot long. And I think a lot of the Mopar folks are very sad. Like, people are huge Dodge fans are sad because now they're worried about what's going to happen. And is the brand going to get, I think they're worried. I don't think it will, that it's going to sort of lose its oomph. But I think, I don't think they're going to kill Dodge. I don't think they're going to have cars. People are really, what's this, the new guy, McAleer, is that how you say his name?
I think so, yeah.
That he's a new CEO. I mean, he's gonna be a good steward. But yeah, I saw much pining away online from Dodge fans who were worried that this would mean that it would sort of be neutered, that the Dodge brand wouldn't have the same kind of power and the same kind of oomph, and the a guy at the helm that understood it as well as Tim. But The next person will. It's just sad Tim's gone. Just make He's so passionate bricks. About it. So.
Let's make just say, like Michael Eisner, when he took over Brit Disney, he did a lot of great things. And then by the time he left, not so much.
Yeah, you know, everyone, I mean,
everyone has an expiration date at their job.
Exactly.
I have some people I need you to tell that to. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't care. Everyone wants to come at me. I don't mind.
When it's true. Me, like, there's a point where you matter how good you are at a job and how amazing you are. Yeah. There's a point where it's like, you know what? Somebody else's turn to run things. So yeah. I think it'll be good. I'm sad to see him go because he was fun to watch.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, the
fun
man
to was watch. Not
was
fun.
Never a dull moment.
Fun to watch.
He would say things, and it was like you could just feel collectively the PR team going like, "Ooh, like why did he, you know?" It's like
you could feel the cringe even without looking around. Right? At them,
yeah. You didn't even have to look, and you knew behind you a whole bunch of people were doing that hand motion, like
Rick Deno and the rest of the team was like,
"Stop! Somebody stop him!" Because he would just say the most fabulous, ridiculous things.
Turn off the mic. Turn off the mic.
Somebody get him off this. They need a hook. So he will be missed by everybody, I think.
He made a lot of money. He had a huge impact. I mean, the Hellcat, come on.
He did. Yeah. He did.
Huge impact. Now he can go fish or something.
So
I can't imagine him fishing. He makes Hellcats.
Just yelling at the fish.
Fighting and fishing. Like,
in America, the fish just jump in the boat. He's going to get a really powerful boat.
He's going to have a boat with a Hellcat engine in the back and just rev it. And the fish are just going to jump out of the water into the boat.
He's going to have a shotgun that he shoots into the water.
No, I think I like Sam's idea. It's a Hellcat engine. He revs it and the fish just whoosh, get thrown into the boat. He's like, that's how you fish.
America.
Do you think that that Tim jumped or was pushed?
You know, they've done a lot of
and they've had three CEOs of RAM in the last 3 years.
Yeah, but they've done a lot of stuff where a lot of people have left the company. You know, they've done all these trying to cut costs and stuff after the UAW, and just in general they've been trying to cut things. So a lot of people have taken early retirements and taken packages and deals. So
how old is Tim?
57, I think I saw. He was in his 50s.
Yeah, he's been with Chrysler for 32 years. So,
yeah.
So he's probably somewhere in his 50s.
Oh, he didn't want. I don't.
He may have just decided he was done with, like.
I'm not down with this.
But why?
Bullshit.
You know, at this,
he might have been very much like, nah.
I mean, this is only a couple of months before they actually launch the Charger Daytona. I mean. If you were running that brand, you know, wouldn't you stick around a couple more months
to finish, you know,
to at least get that vehicle out the door?
Unless it was a matter of, like, he has a buyout or something, or he had some behind the scenes, or just was like, no, you know what? Let the next person shepherd the brand into the next era. And Tim says goodbye and the new guy comes in.
I was chatting with some folks earlier today, and, you know, speculating about, okay, now that he's out of Stellantis, would he go somewhere else? Would he go work somewhere else?
I can't imagine.
And who would hire him? Who would want to have Tim Peniskis as part of the
team? Still the Hellcat, father of the Hellcat. He's still the Hellcat guy. I can't imagine, like, Kia's like, hey, let's hire the Hellcat guy. I think he's just retired. I think he's done. He's going to take his money and run and enjoy fishing with your Hellcat motorboat.
Yeah. Shotguns into the water.
Yeah.
Throw some M80s in the water. Yeah.
Doing dual V8s on his fishing boat.
You got to find out somehow, guys, what Tim's doing when he retires.
What is Tim up to? That's our new weekly thing. What's Tim doing today?
Tim doing this week.
Okay. All right. We got a couple of listener questions this week. Thanks for sending them in. Remember, you can send those to feedback@wheelbearings.media. We'd love to get your questions and to answer them. So the first one, I think it's pronounced Chamaqua, but please, you know, if I've mispronounced that, please shoot me another email and give me a pronunciation guide and I will correct it next week.
Wait, at the bottom it says, thanks for the great insight, Ed.
Oh,
so maybe Chamaqua is just their screen name?
Could be, yes.
Ed.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks, Ed.
I don't know. How do you pronounce this? Ed.
Ed.
Ed. Anyway. Ed. Ed Shimakwa, whoever, had a question about dual clutch transmissions. Says, wondering how dual clutch transmissions are different from traditional automatics. What advantages and disadvantages are and your collective experiences with them? For background, my 2019 Kia Niro plug-in hybrid has one that makes odd mechanical shifting noises and subtle jerks around first to third gears. I just had the transmission replaced under warranty, and the service tech told me that it's normal to hear the solenoids make noise and to try to find a gear on hills and slowing down to a stop, and even taking off from them as well. Why would anybody engineer a transmission like that? It's annoying, not smooth at all. I never felt anything like that from Honda Civic automatics from 1984, 1996, and 2006. Do you have any opinions? I bought a used one during COVID and have a car loan, so I'm kind of stuck with it. The car is good apart from that.
Okay, first of all, you're comparing a transmission to any transmission that Honda makes. So there's your first problem.
Right.
Would you say that about Honda CVTs?
I mean, it's still a Honda transmission. I feel okay. Like
Honda.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't make it. Does of the CVTs? It's probably one of the best, but it's still a CVT. Yeah. It's like, even if you're making the best CVT in the world, guess what you're driving?
A CVT.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So basics of a dual clutch transmission. I'll start with traditional automatic transmissions. Traditional automatic transmissions use planetary gear sets. And I'm not going to explain what all it is. I'll find a link and put it in there. But and what you have is a torque converter and some clutches in the transmission case. The torque converter is a fluid coupling that multiplies the torque. Uses highly viscous transmission fluid, and when one side of the torque converter turns, it swirls up the transmission fluid, which causes the other side to turn and turn the gears in turn. They tend to be fairly smooth. But in the distant past, they were also not very efficient because of that torque converter, the fluid coupling. And so there was a lot of slippage in there. And so you didn't get as good fuel efficiency with those types of transmissions, but they were, you could drive them without having to use a clutch pedal or anything like that. They shifted automatically. They were very complicated. When they needed to be repaired, they were very expensive to repair because of how mechanically complicated they were. Modern automatic transmissions, traditional automatic transmissions are electronically controlled rather than having these really crazy complex hydraulic valve bodies on the bottom. And they're much more efficient than old school transmissions. And they generally perform better than manual transmissions. A DCT, a DCT basically is kind of like a hybrid of a manual and an automatic. It's an automatic transmission that it does the shifting for you. But what you have is you have two sets of gears on parallel shafts, one for the odd gear ratios, one for the evens. So you have like 1, 3, and 5 on one shaft and 2, 4, and 6 on the other shaft, or 1, 3, 5, 7, however many you have. You have the odds on one and the evens on the other shaft. And there's actually two clutches like the ones in a manual transmission, but they're electronically controlled and electronically actuated. And one clutch controls the odd gears. The other one controls the even gears. And so what happens is when you're in first gear, the clutch for the even gears is open, it's disengaged, so it's decoupled. So it's not sending any torque through the even gears. And what you can do is the computer that's controlling all this mess, while first gear is engaged and the even gear clutch is disengaged, it can mesh those gears while you're declutched. And then you can instantly switch places and the odd gear clutch opens and the even gear clutch closes. And so you can have these really rapid shifts. The DCTs were originally developed in the 1980s by Porsche. They tried it on some race cars. They had problems with durability, didn't use them, but the technology was still there and kept getting developed. And Volkswagen was the first to really popularize the DCT. They kind of figured it out in the late 90s, early 2000s. And we had a DCT in our former Jetta TDI. Worked great. It was a wet clutch DCT. That's what Volkswagen was making. So there was oil in the clutches that helped smooth things out. They generally worked really well. We didn't have any issues with ours. But you also have some loss of efficiency with a wet clutch DCT. Other automakers have been trying to do dry clutch DCTs that are a little more efficient. They've tended to run into problems with smoothness and reliability. Ford had a big problem with theirs in the 2010s. The power shift DCT that they got from Getrag that they used in the Focus and the Fiesta and some other cars in Europe, they were extremely unreliable. They had a lot of issues with them. Hyundai, Kia's DCTs have generally been pretty good. They occasionally have some issues, but that's kind of how a DCT works. So it alternates back and forth between kind of like an automated manual transmission, two of them that are running in parallel and switching back and forth between the odd and even gears as you go up and down through the gears.
Ta-da!
So engineering explained. DCT engineering explained.
That's why, but yeah, it shifts so fast. There's two.
Yeah.
You essentially have two tiny little transmissions inside your transmission.
Yeah.
Little baby transmissions.
Yeah. And sometimes it works.
Sometimes
it don't.
Sometimes it's like, yeah. No, and not today. I don't feel like transmissioning today. No, thank you.
All right. The other question was from Emil. He has two questions, actually. Which setting for adaptive dampers will wear them out faster, sport or comfort?
Oh, man. I'm going to say sport. Just because you're more aggressive on them.
I feel like sport, because isn't it having to, like, if it's comfort, it lets you kind of float a little bit more, whereas sport is like bam, bam, bam. Like, it would be harder.
You're compressing it, now it's working harder because you're driving more.
Sam, engineer, which one are we right?
I have never heard of a difference between the two, because basically what an adaptive damper is doing is it's just turning some valves inside the shock.
It's just doing this all day.
Yeah. To be honest, I don't think that there's going to be any difference.
No difference? Okay. No. Well, Robbie, I think we were right in our guess.
I'm going to say we're correct. Nicole and Rob, two out of three. Yeah.
So
with no data whatsoever.
So we have reached consensus on what how to wear out an adaptive damper faster. Whatever that consensus was.
Guessing. But I don't think it should make a difference.
I don't think it's going to make enough of a difference if it does for anybody to be like, oh, if I had just not used sport mode or whatever.
Yeah. It's like a friend I had who had a Ford Ranger in the 90s and it had like 5 miles and he was always very proud of how few miles he had. I'm like, yeah, but you never drive your car. Like, what's the point?
It just sits there and it's sad. It just never gets driven.
He's probably got it on Bring a Trailer. He's probably getting like $40,000 for it now.
Yeah, see, now you know why he did it. He's like,
but he also lost 30 years of driving this vehicle.
Not worth it.
So I don't think the value is really.
He's going to take that 40 grand, buy another car, let it sit for another 30 years.
Yeah. Good for you. Yeah.
All right. And then the other question that Emil had was, can you compare the battery platform, from the Tesla battery platform and the new Audi PPE platform? So the PPE is the premium platform electric. Okay. It was developed by Audi and Porsche. It's being used in the new Porsche Macan and the Audi EQ6 e-tron. We don't have a whole lot of detail yet on the PPE battery. We do know a few things. First of all, the Tesla batteries all use cylindrical cells, which are cheaper to manufacture than prismatic or pouch cells. But if you've ever tried to pack cans or jars or bottles or anything into a box, you will notice that there are gaps in between those things. You know, when you put a bunch of cylindrical objects into a box, there's some empty space in between them. And, you know, in the past, Tesla used much smaller cells, 20, you know, either 18 millimeter diameter or 21 millimeter diameter cells that, you know, as you make those cylinders smaller and smaller, the spaces become smaller. But that also means you have a lot more cells, like the Model S and X battery pack with 18650 cells is something like 8,000 cells in there. And you have to connect all of those cells. And so you've got to weld, you know, wires on every one of these, the terminals, the positive and negative terminals on every one of these cells to connect them all and make it into a giant battery. And what their newer batteries, Tesla's newer batteries, use 46 millimeter cells, which are larger. But, you know, they have bigger gaps in between the cells. But, you know, they're still relatively cheaper to make than rectangular cells. You know, 46 millimeters is generally seen as kind of the sweet spot of making it as big as you can, to reduce the number of cells you require and the number of connections you have to weld and everything, but at the same time, minimizing the wasted space in there. One of the things that they're doing is they're filling those gaps with structural foam, which makes the battery completely unserviceable. So if anything goes wrong, you basically have to scrap the entire battery pack. It's kind of a balance between cost and performance and service or lack of serviceability. And that's the approach that Tesla has taken with their batteries. The Audi batteries and also the Tesla batteries up until the Cybertruck were all 400 volt batteries. The Cybertruck is the first with an 800 volt battery. The PPE battery pack is all 800 volt, but it uses either prismatic or pouch cells, which are larger format cells. There's less empty space in the battery pack, but it's also more challenging to cool those larger cells to manage the temperatures. So there's trade-offs, you know, pluses and minuses for both.
If you're just in the car and you just want a nice car, just get the Audi.
Yeah, what he said.
Yeah. The Audi is definitely more fancy car feeling than the Tesla.
Yep. Yeah.
Even the first e-tron, the electric, not, let's pretend the plug-in hybrid e-tron doesn't exist. Just for the electric e-tron, the Q4, I think they're calling that. No, Q8. The smaller one. Is it the Q8? Or was it Q5?
The original e-tron is now the Q8 e-tron.
Okay. So the difference just between those two is pretty, it's the first one was like, oh, this is a nice little EV. This one, the most recent one, the jump in quality and performance and everything they're doing over there is pretty stark. So I'm assuming the PPE jump is going to be just as impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be much improved.
Yes.
Will it be as good or better than Tesla? We'll see in the next few months, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when the Q6 and the Macan, you know, finally get out there for testing, we'll find out more. All right, that's it for this week. We'll have some more interesting stuff next week. We'll be talking about driving the Chevy Silverado EV RST First Edition next week.
Ooh.
Stay tuned for that. So, bye everybody.
See ya.
Bye.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.